Today is November the 2nd, 1978. My name is Robert McCandless, and with me is Johnny Taku Jack of Atlin. Johnny, can you tell us when you were born?
April the 26th, 1903.
Were your mother's people from Atlin?
Yes.
But you have some of your families on the coast, though, eh? Like, are you a Tlingit? Would you call yourself a Tlingit?
Yeah.
And you speak Tlingit?
Oh, yeah. Well, as far as that Tlingit concerned, that's from many, many years ago, that during the high water of the world flood, some of the people from the coast carried away to the England. And that's how we settled down. Taku area. That's including Atlin and Taku River.
Did you ever make that trip from Atlin down to Juneau?
I do, lots of times. Three or four dozen times. 1930 is the last trip I had down to Juneau, Alaska Trail, by way of the foot trail from Atlin over the mountains. The foot trail goes through a place they call Silver Salmon Lake. The Silver Salmon comes up in that lake through the Silver Salmon River. That Silver Salmon River confluence into the Mackinac River. And then we go over the summer foot trail. The Indians got a foot trail ever since before the Atlin strike for years and years back down to the Taku River. They're right at the confluence of the Chilka River and Mackinac. That's about 12 miles away from the Hinton River. You go direct north from the Hinton River up to Mackinac. And that's where they used to call the place a canoe landing. And that's where they used to have canoes. And I used to hunt beaver around there up to the Silver Salmon, through down there to the Big Mackinac Taku River, down ways, then I go over the mountain through the place they call King Salmon Lake, and then come back home sometimes to Crow River, and we hit the telegraph line, and then we follow that into Atlin when we get through trapping beaver. But 1930 and 31, I was down Talsiqua.
Was that when the mine down there got started? Were you?
No, that was the year that George Bacon sold a mine to the company. I don't know what company it is. I was working down the Yukon River when that they find the mineral in there.
Oh yeah.
And 1930, my brother Henry phoned me and he told me that they were finding mineral down the Taku River and they're going to go back down to stake it. So I did give 30 days notice that I was going to quit the river and go back down to the Yukon, down to the Taku River to stake a claim. Mm-hmm. I expect I'd make more money out of it, so I left here in 1930. And in August we left Atlin, going down to the Taku River.
Was that a tough trail, that one, or the foot trail?
No, it's pretty well open. Mm-hmm. It's pretty well open, but last summer when I was down there with the helicopter, when I was flying low over it, I see the trail is pretty well rode in places.
Well, the people use dog packs?
Dog packs, and in the winter time they use sleigh.
But your mother was from Atlin too, or was she from the coast?
Was she born right in Atlin?
Oh, I see.
My great grandmother from the coast. Mm-hmm. But we all born in Atlin.
What if it's not a personal question, I'm not really sure if it is or not. What is your moiety, your house? Are you Wolf or Crow?
What do you call that? in Indian, they call them, it's hard, Kohit Tom. That means it's a house and a sun on top. It shines straight down to the house. That's in the valley. The Indians call them the noon house. When the sun is right straight up and down like that, that means it's shining to the cellar. And that means eat is the time to eat, 5 o'clock. At 12 o'clock, the old Indians call them Kohit. That's 12 o'clock of the day. So my back generation is what you call Kohit Tom. So that's what I am. Same way with the wolf people. The wolf people, they call it in English way now, they call them wolf tribes and the crow tribes. Mm-hmm. But amongst the crow tribes, there could be three different home or things they have, and they named like it. Mm-hmm. Now the wolf, in Tlingit, they call Yan Ye Di. That's the wolf tribes.
I see. It's something we don't have in our culture at all. But so the country that you're familiar with is mostly Atlin, down to Telegraph Creek, and then over to Cassiar. So it's that district that you were in most of the time?
Well, as usual, the old men and the younger generation had it the same as the time at a long time ago. There is a boundary mark between the Tahltans and the Taku Indians. The Taku Indians and the Teslin Indians, the reason they call them Atlin Teslin Band, but it was at a Taku and Mackinac Band. That was the way it's supposed to be, but they had it the other way, the Indian Band, because the Mackinac people and the Taku people, it's next door neighbors to one another, therefore they had their peace together. And I think they're going to do on the next door. They are telling the other ones what they're going to do, and they all agree with it. Mm-hmm. But now they call it the Atlin Teslin Band. The whole original name of Chief Tagger Jack being wanted to use was Taku and Mackinac Band.
Mm-hmm. But your mother's people in Atlin, you would be spending more time on the Taku than you would going into Atlin, but you knew people in Atlin, I suppose. New people in Teslin, but you wouldn't necessarily go there much.
Well, since they are moved up into Teslin, we don't go there very much, no. Mm-hmm. I don't. But down the Taku River at the present time now, that was the most place that we used to go to do some king salmon fishing and all the other fishing we got. In other words, around the Atlin area, right up to the word Indian village in Atlin, right today, they used to call that place the Sucker Creek Bay, because the suckers goes up in that little good mineral spring, alkalized water spring. They spawn up in there, and that's why they call it the Sucker Fish Bay.
Oh, I see.
And then the old time people, they used to call it, they got two names for that. They used to call them the Alkali Bay. And that little lake behind the village, they call them Alkali Lake. That's what it was named. Mm-hmm. And then that little mountain up the north side of it, the hill, they used to call it Alkali Hill. That's the way it was named. Mm-hmm. And then there's Surprise Lake. We don't know how did that name come in. It's the white people call it Surprise Lake. But the old Indian call them like the one in Whitehorse up north there. They call them Kusawa.
Oh,
that's what it means. That's Thlinkit language, and so this one, a white horse, is Thlinkit language. So in Athens, this lake, Surprise Lake, now they call it, it's the original name from the Indians, it's Surprise Lake. And the river run, a creek run from there to Athens Lake, the original name from the Indians, they call Kusawihin. So that means narrow creek, because it's coming from a narrow lake. Now they call it Pine Creek. Yeah, that's where the old Indians, in the summertime, till late in the fall, they used to have the original campground of the was where the Indian village is now. And then late in the fall, they all spread up, everyone go here and there, because that's where they used to be, just like the white people a long time ago. Each one of the Indians got a place to trap, and nobody else interfered with them. Therefore, they would be peace with everyone, the trappers and the other people. There's no fighting over a fur land wherever there is a fur. But as ever, like any other time, some of the young fellows got no such thing as a fur as a beaver in the springtime. They used to take them out with them so they can pick up some beaver skins, but they to make something out of it. Them days I'm talking about, there used to be traders coming from Juneau, Alaska, the Indians, and they used to trade out with a lot of things. They used to trade out with rifles, blankets, and buckets, and knives, bunch of knives, and all that sort of stuff, and that's what they're using them things for. And before that time started, the Indians used to use fur clothes in the wintertime. Everything is in fur. Therefore, just like the skidoo suits they're using right today, every clothes they have is warm, because they use the fur wearing animal hide for clothes. But when the white people come in, they don't use them things anymore, because there's a big demand for the fur, and they have to sell their fur instead of making clothes out of it. There used to be a lot of older people, or even the women, used to say something about this fur is sure spoiled when they have to sell it, and then at the end they got nothing. But a long time ago, one good fur clothes there would last them 2 or 3 years if they took care of it.
I'm going to stop the tape here and tell him to fix the phone. Now it should be running again. That one's on too. Well, you were saying that when the trade in furs developed and people stopped making their own fur clothes, but did the people in Atlin, they used to take furs down to the coast too? Did you know? And trade them there with people?
Yes, they did. They used to go down to the polar coast, trade the fur for what they want. And in fact, they get the stuff cheaper down the coast than they do when it come up in the interior, because they have to just about pay for the trips that they are making up there too. So one day, some of the Indians, when they catch a furs, they go down the Taku River with somebody, and then they buy boats down there. They used to make the fur, duck out canoes down the Taku, down in Alaska. And then they buy their own boat and they come back up. They use sail. They put a sail up the mast. When there's good heavy wind, they can go from the Tulsa Corps right up to the forks of the Mackinac and the England River. But when there's no wind, they have to use the use line. Mm-hmm. Their line that go. That's how they used to travel the Taku River.
Did they used to buy anything else on the coast to take back to Athens? like tools and stuff? Or?
Well, they do, especially the rifles, and they used to make their own powder, and they used to load their own shells and stuff like that. And they buy the powder, black powder, by the keg. By the keg and the lead and stuff like that they used to buy. And they make their own bullets, but that is a ball, muscle loaded, and know how to use that things. And at that time, the Indians don't use very much white man food. But if they come up and use to bring some flour, like 25-pound flour or 50-pound, that thing would last the whole year, because even the little kids and all, they're not interested in that. It's because, I guess, that they don't know how to cook it or whatsoever. And of course, they used to buy clothes, shoes, and stuff like that, but mittens. And winter, make a winter moccasin, they used to make them make it themselves in the interior. But in the summertime, they use shoes, the traveling boots. Now, they never used dress shoe clothes in the area around that in that time, because it's just a virgin country at that time. There was no white people around. No gold, strike, or nothing.
Then, when you were probably quite a young man, you were shown how you were taken out on the draft line, probably even as a boy, I suppose, eh?
Oh, yeah, ever since I was a kid, I started out with snares. Mm-hmm. Trying to catch some rabbits with snares, and I even tried a snare minks, weasels. It took practice. You miss it, and we asked the older man, and they show us, this is how you set it. But if the weasel jumps through the snare, that means the snare is too big, and then you have to regulate it. One of these days, by regulating it yourself, you might regulate it just right, and you'll never miss, and which I did. I know how to set them things. Deadfall, you would use deadfall. And the beaver, in the olden days, they used to make sinew thread-like, and they knitted a big mesh of net, and they used that for beaver. And the beaver, when they catch a beaver, they had they use a rattle as at the end of the pole, way tight to make out of the caribou hoofs. And the caribou hoofs, it's just like a loud bell, they make lots of rattle. Hmm. They tie that on top of the pole where they stuck the pole into the mud in the bottom. That's where they tie the net for the beaver. And at the 5 o'clock around that time, the beaver coming out. You set it away from the house, not close to the house. The reason why they set it away from the house, because the young beaver is just like children. They play for them. They want to play. And if you set net close to the beaver house, you will catch the young ones, the little kid beaver. That's the reason that all the Indians, they used to set the net away from the beaver house. And that way, as soon as the beaver go underwater, they generally go underwater when they first come out, because they alert, they watch in case of danger. They travel under the water to sit a certain distance. And by watching the net, your first thing with the beaver get into it, they can start rattling. You have to be hurry up about it and pull it out, because the beaver can cut the net open and get out of it. So if they do, beaver do cut one thread or one mesh or something like that, they can always fix that up. So that's where the caribou hoofs come in handy.
But the beaver would get tangled up in the net, eh? That was the idea?
Yeah, the beaver get tangled up in that.
So you gotta catch him quick before he chews his way out.
Yes, that's the reason they keep that caribou hoofs tied to the pole so that you'll be notified that if the beaver get caught in the net, and you gotta hurry up and take it out, get it out. By the time you get him up ashore, the beaver is willing to fight, and at that time he's got no chance, time to cut a hole in the net. And of course, you have to use a club on him and subdue it.
Did your mother have brothers? Were those the men that took you out the first time?
Yes, my mother's brother, his name was Charlie. And he's the one that mostly I've done hunting with from the beginning.
So he took you out where he normally went then?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, as soon as you were catching your own fur, were you then selling it on your own, or did they sell it for you? Trapping him is one thing, but when you got the fur, you also have to know how to sell the fur and how to deal it. And
well, at that time, the younger generation, they pretty well have respect for their father and their mother. And when we catch any furs like that, we left to their father to handle it and sell it. For that reason, you get a good price because it's the older man that's selling it. But when there's a young generation like that selling anything, I remember selling a great big mink one time for three bars of chocolate bars for that, while that thing worth at $7-$10. So we don't speak very good English them days, and we don't know what was ticking. We thought it was great when we get a few candy for the fur. So that's the reason that the older people tell us to give them the fur, and they sell it for us, and we don't keep the money. If I get a pair of overalls and a shirt and stuff like that, I'm just as happy as ever, because my father and my mother, they used the money to buy clothes, grub, food, flour, beans, rice, and stuff like that. We're happy to get that. We're very well satisfied with that too. Not like nowadays, if kids have to be 15 years old and he's run out on the street and he's on his own boss. But through the olden Indian days, he have to be 25 years old before he can start going out by himself.
It took that long for a man to learn how to.
Yes, it took that long, and they have to learn everything before they let us go, because then we know what to do for ourselves.
So they'd been at it maybe 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
Working with somebody before they were on their own.
Yeah.
Was that about the age you got married?
Who's that?
Was that about the age when you got married? About the
yes, at the time after the 25, or sometimes be about 20 years old and they get married, because they have to learn how to catch fur and how to support yourself. And if you get married, you have to learn how to support your family or your wife. If not, well, you just, they don't call that a man, they call him still. You're just a teenager. Mm-hmm. You have to prove that you can take care of yourself. You have to prove that if you get married, that you're going to take care of them. And you have to prove that if you've got a wife, that you're going to respect them and you're not going to fight with them. All that sort of stuff. And if anybody gets married and fighting his wife all the time, the band gets together, that his own band, and they said that man should never marry anybody anymore. So they did. They isolate him away from getting married. And women's parents wouldn't give a man a woman, because they know he mistreated the woman. But if he could prove that he could have respect for the family and have respect for his wife, they're very happy to see them in them days.
Mm-hmm. Was this still going on when you were a young man, say the 20s?
Yes, in some areas they still own it today. Mm-hmm. In testing, I think part of it is still that way. In testing.
Yeah. So when you were started out trapping as a young man and you were catching fur, you did most of your trading right in Atlin, did you?
Yes.
Did you ever come to Whitehorse or go to Teslin or Juneau?
No, no, I did. Well, that's not very long ago, that one, from when I had trap line in Atlin. I used to sell my fur at the Taylor and Brewers.
At Atlin?
Whitehorse.
Oh, yeah.
But I had to, we had to pay the royalty on it before we sell the fur in there.
Royalty on a BC fur?
From the, yeah, from the BC fur.
Yeah.
And then I used to take your fur from Cassie out to Vancouver when I first say when I go out on holiday, but I have to have export papers from the government, from the government office before I export anything out from Cassie. So they knew it's a BC fur. Then we got that tag, what do you call that tag now they have?
A seal?
Yeah, seal. We have to have that. It was quite a different than a long time ago. They used to give us that tag, beaver tag. Unless we dried a beaver, we're supposed to tag them right away, even right at the trap line. But if we started off when they had no tag on it, we'll get caught up, we'll get fined $25 for that.
Hmm. Did you ever understand why they had those seals on, or why they did that, or?
Yes, so they keep the record of how much fur coming out of each trap line, and that fur it's coming out of BC. That's the reason they have it that way. I think they have the same way in the Yukon too. So if there's any BC tag coming into the Yukon, they wanted to know how did it get there. So which I believe that was a very good idea, because that before that there was poachers from the Yukon and there was a poachers from the BC to the Yukon, and there's always a trouble mixed up, but there wasn't a guy that ever was proof that he was poaching, but they know he did, but they have to prove it before they say he did.
I know the government was really worried about the poaching, and that they closed the beaver season, I think, in the Yukon in about 1918, and it was closed until the early 20s, and then they closed it again, and of course they were worried that beaver were taken in BC and being taken across and back and forth. They couldn't ever get together on their laws. With beaver, was the fur that you relied on mostly for income, or did you try for others as well? Like, did you get most of your money from beaver as a rule?
No. I got the beaver money from the beaver, yes. And I got money from dry land fur animals, such as mink, weasel, muskrats, otter, beaver, and marten, fisher.
Fisher too, eh?
Coyotes, wolves, fox, all that stuff. We used to get money for it.
Was there any trouble associated with, say, taking otter? Did you try to, some people sort of upset and wouldn't trap otter anytime?
Well, it was amongst the Indians a long time ago. They didn't want to fool around with the otter, because they say otter is a queer, wicked animal, and they believe that it's just like the believing in something that is gonna be a bad luck or something like that would happen to you if you catch otter. But I don't believe in that. We don't believe it because there was good price of money for otter, so we kill them like that too. Well, of course, I got to have to mix up a lot of little things about what the Indians, they think about things. Superstitious, of course. The beaver, when we're killing the beaver, we're not supposed to feed the meat to the dogs. Mm-hmm. Because the beaver, it's just like a people. Amongst the things, amongst the fur and the wild animal, the spirit of the beaver goes back to the spirits of the live ones and tell them that they're feeding on meat to the dogs. For that reason, the Indians got a bad luck, they can't catch any more beaver. But the meat, as far as that goes, the beaver meat is good and they don't want to feed them to the dogs. That's the reason they don't want the young fellas to feed them to the dogs. What I figure, that's the reason they don't want to, they have such story as that. Because when we dry and smoke the beaver meat, one day when we bring it home, the old people, they're really happy to get the meat, beaver meat. Because that's the kind of meat we don't eat all the time, once a year. It's when the trapping season is over.
Well, you need that, like you get your beaver meat in the spring, and maybe that's a time there's not that much other kinds of meat around, so
that's
you could
right.
depend on that beaver.
And that's the only meat that's it's not poor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good standard.
It's good in the spring.
Yeah, and a bear. Bear meat is good in the spring too because it's fat.
I'll just stop this tape a moment. Now we're on side two of November 2nd, 1978 with Johnny Taku Jack. Side two, November 2nd, 1978 with Johnny Taku Jack. Okay, now, you were explaining about the beaver meat. Who did you sell to in Atlin? Who were the traders there in the 20s?
There was three traders in there. The first man that I remember was selling buying fur for Logie Shoals. His name was John Sand. He was the butcher.
What was the name of the company he was buying for?
It's not a company, but the old trader used to be in Atlin, Louis Shoals.
Oh, I see.
Louis Shoals.
And he was the only trader in Atlin?
No, there was another one there. He was the clothes merchant. He used to sell clothes in Atlin. His name was Clarence M. Sands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a name I'd heard. And both these people were buying in the 20s and 30s, eh?
Oh, it's from way back, 1918, 1910s, and stuff like that. And later on, around the 1925, the fellow, the trader, used to build a store in Atlin. He started buying fur, too, with John Garrett.
John Garrett. But the people didn't necessarily have to sell to those people. They could have come to Whitehorse if they'd paid the tax, or they might have traded to some of their relatives coming up from the coast.
Yeah.
So they had other places to sell their fur.
Yeah. There used to be a fur buyer come from the Taku River, too. His name was Billy Strong, who used to have a trading post down the Taku River. They called a trading post the Taku Trading Post.
Well, how would you, now suppose you were, when you were a young man, you'd come in and you'd had a bunch of beaver and some other furs, and you were trying to decide who to sell them to. Would you offer them, say, to these people you mentioned, and if you didn't like the price, you'd take them to Whitehorse or something? Like, how would you decide when to sell or when not to sell? How would you know the price was good?
Well, we generally tell them that we're not going to sell the fur here, we're going to take it out. If we don't get a good price for it.
I see.
because we're already, the trappers, they were just like the Trappers Association them days. Mm-hmm. They used to send word to one another where they're paying the high price of the fur. Like if Teston paying the good price of the fur, they tell one another, and so is White Horse. The trappers used to tell one another how the trap and the fur prices are. So we used to tell the people in the fur buyers in my hometown in Athens, we expected a good sum for the fur price because we know the price how it is outside of Athens. So if we don't get the price what we are thinking here, we're going to take it out and sell it there. So John Garrett and Louis Schultz and Clarence M. Sands, they give us a bet, who got the highest bet. And we know what the White Horse or Teston is paying. And if it's the same, sometimes it go over the Teston price, then we sell it right there in Athens, we don't take it out.
Mm-hmm. But there's so many people going backwards and forwards, they say, oh, well, so-and-so got a good price here, and
yes,
a lot of talk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did the people have credit with the trader? Did you use the term jawbone much? I mean, is that a word the people there used? And they say they had jawbone with the trader?
Well, no. There's two of them that they don't, but old man Louis shows whether he buy the fur or not. He used to supply the Indians out with the groceries and stuff like that to go out trapping. Mm-hmm. But he was a very good man, so whenever we sold and sell the fur, we always pay for everything what he gave us.
Because mm-hmm. I know some of the stories about the early traders, they used to complain that they'd give credit, but they wouldn't get paid back. So of course they're in tight squeeze then. Means they got to drop their prices down, means they don't get quite as much fur. And the whole thing sort of works back on itself. And the trader, he goes broke, or people get cheated. A funny thing.
Well, that old man Louis showed when he outfit the Indians out to trap. That is the young fellas, but the old timers, they got their own money. They had money from a year before when trapping they do. They don't spend it, they hang on to that. Mm-hmm. And when they're going out trapping, they buy their own supply. But like for myself, when I was 20, 25 years old, when I was a young man, I had no money, I go to shows and he outfit me. Then he'd tell me, he said, you go and find out how much are you getting for your fur. Because I'm telling you, he said, I'll give $100 more than any one of the bit you get on your fur. So no matter how much we get for the fur, we always tell the truth that we get so much bit on this fur, and they give us $100 over it. Because he liked to see the fur coming in, and he, no doubt he's making money on it, so mm-hmm. he gets the fur. So he got just about plenty of all the fur that comes in here, where he shows. Even the older people that trapped before, getting the stuff of their own and get out trapping, even them, they always get $100 more than the other fur buyers. So the other fur buyers have to compete with that. They mm-hmm. have to put up with that.
Maybe he liked, I suppose too, there's a difference in trappers in that some trapper is going to give a nice clean skins, all nice fleshed out, no holes in it,
yes.
Nice and clean. Another guy that might be a bit greasy, might be a bit of blood on him, and so on, so he's going to get a bit less.
They don't get less, but they cut just plenty of half of the fur price off.
I see. They just cut it in half.
Some beaver that they bring in, there'll be a lot of grease on it, a lot of fat on it. And the trapper always says, what's the matter? That fella got better price than them, I do. Well, then they showed him the fur, what it looks like. Because the fur buyer says if there's a lot of grease on a lot of fat on a beaver hide, that burns the beaver hide. That thing is no good, it's supposedly clean. Mm-hmm. So I learned that for a fact for myself from another fellow friend. We always call one another brothers. A fellow named Tom Williams, he's a great trapper. And him and I used to trap together, and he showed me how to fresh the fat out of beaver skin and otter skin. That's the simple, very reason why that the Indians, they never used to like to trap otter too, because it's nothing but a fat.
Oh.
A lot of fat on it. There's a lot of work on it to clean the fat off. And then if you know how to do it, you can clean the fat off. But some of the people don't know how to do it. They scrape some part of the skin away, and then the fur just pull away from that.
Yeah, if you cut it too deep, it cuts the roots off the guard hairs, and they fall away.
Yeah, I've
heard that.
Yeah, that's the reason, really, why the older Indians never used to like it. And then at the same time, the beaver was very priceless. It was very cheap. Mm-hmm. Until later, I know. I know the last time when beaver went up, it was otter. When the otter skin went up, that's when the Japs invade R2, Aleutian Islands. They're using the more fur of that stuff for the fryer's toast lining, the short fur. Mm-hmm. That's when the beaver hide went up sky high. Marten skins especially went up. It's just a little thing there. It's $115 for a good marten skin. And pale or brown, just the same. They all come in one price. And so is the beaver. The beaver went up to $79 for a pelt, I know.
In about 42.
Yeah. 42, yeah.
$79.
Yeah. Because I went out hunting, trapping. I was out 20 days, and when I come back, I got $2,200 for the beaver skins. And that's more money than I ever make in 5 years out of trapping. And 24 hours after I sold the beaver skins, the Hudson Bay Company get a telegram and it says, no more than $25 a pelt. Draw. Some of the trappers come in, some of them get 70, 40, 50 beaver skins. They didn't make half as much as what I did make of the few skins I have.
You just caught them at the right time.
Yeah.
Well, did the word get around fast about prices?
Oh, yeah.
Because the prices would change very rapidly.
Yeah, when I was coming back, a fellow named Fred Collison, he's the one I was going to take a day off in there because I was tired. And he told me, he says, if I were you, Johnny, he says, I'd keep a bone with the fur. You know what it is now? I said, no. He says, $75, $79 a pelt. I sold three. He says, that's what I got. Well, I said, okay, I'm going tonight. So away I went. And 24 hours, just the time I was going to stay at Collison's Ranch, it would have dropped to 25.
How would they find out? They get telegrams in?
Well, the company get telegram. They send telegram from the head office that wherever it is, that the fur dropped. So that's how it went. Mm-hmm. But as it is, the old time of the white man, anything is going too high like that, the bottom falls out. And that's the reason that I had a rush in, and which I caught him just in time. There's a fellow still alive in Cassiar today. His name is Pete Hinder. He was a great, great trapper. He's a pretty good, strong Indian. He brought in 60 beaver. So you can imagine what that $25 a pelt. So it's got to be a Rankin.
How many beaver?
60.
60 beaver.
Yeah.
This is in one season.
One season.
With those prices?
No.
A little less?
$25 for a Rankin and 10, 9, all that in prices.
Yeah.
what they told us about Vermont, about, we say $25 each. Smaller than all the fabrics.
Those are good wages.
It is.
Sometimes I think there must have been a lot more money floating around this country in the 20s and 30s, and even before they built the Alaska Highway, than there is now.
It is. It is the people. The Indians used to go in the boats from Mackin right into Juneau, Alaska, after the trapping season over, or beaver trapping season is over. They make money.
So they go down.
Some of the old Indians in the springtime come in with 115 or 120 beaver. And them days, the people never bother one another. There used to be no poachers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they never used to kill the kid beavers and the medium 2-year-old beavers. They used to get the 3 years and 4 years. And then they asked me, how did they do them? They don't trap near the beaver houses. They trap away, a mile or so away from the place.
Mm-hmm.
The drift beaver, the big ones drift and the small ones stay home. That's how they used to do them. And for that reason, you go to each one of the trap line, you never find a place that there's no beaver in there, because they never used to clean up the beaver skin.
Mm-hmm.
Beaver from their trap line. Another thing, if they had a 4 or 5 beaver streams in their trap line, they never used to go and clean up the whole bunch of beaver skin all at one time, the whole five beaver streams they had. They used to take one beaver stream every year. And the second year you go to the second and third and fourth and fifth. In 5 years' time you come back to the first one again. And at that time there would be 3 or 4 or 5 litters. But nowadays the young fellas says money, money, money. They'll take everything and they clean out their trap line with the beaver sticks. Right today, some of the places that where I have gone through, there's no beaver in that place. Right now in my beaver trap line where I used to trap beaver, I fly over it a week ago. There isn't a place where the old beaver ponds used to be. It was belonged to a white man, but it was cleaned out. And in a few years' time, I never used that trap line, but it's still under my name. And you talk about beaver. Well, where I see there's beaver. And at my times, the good beaver skins, when I was a young fella there, by golly, the best beef price I ever get, $9 for a blanket beaver. That's in the 24th and the 20th. The best price.
Mm-hmm.
And we go hundreds of miles for that. But nowadays they don't, because the government, I do blame the government for that. They go and give money out to the teenagers, young fellas. And they say, we're hungry, we've got no money, nothing. They give them lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
They give them money right out, and then they like liquor, they stay in the beer parlors and stuff like that. Doesn't matter how much money is. It's in the fur. They say it's not enough in all way. And then at the same time, now Indian, even the Indian young fellas, they don't know how to trap. It's the reason why, that because the father and the mother didn't show them how to trap. And it goes for the same thing about talking their own language. It's the father and mother's fault that the young fellas didn't know how to talk their own language.
Yeah.
Nowadays they want to come back on that thing, and some of them is too late. And some of the older young fellas, that they know their own language. They know their language pretty well, but they just pretend that they don't know their language. Because I told my friend in town here the other day, I said, this fella, he says, he's one of this brown white man. I said, try to be a white man, you don't understand his language. So I used my language then and said something to see what he's going to say. He turned around and looked at me and says, I know what you're talking about. Okay, listen to this one too, you know it? Yeah. I said, you know how to talk your language. What if somebody come around, I said, and say something to criticize you? I said, you're going to hurt us, and then you're not going to know the others? Well, he said, I can't talk that way because they always laugh at me. Look, I said, if you see a bunch of Chinamen, you heard them talking their language. You see a bunch of Italians, they talk their own language. You see other foreign people, they talk their own language. They don't say that's embarrassing or nothing. You've got to use your language. Now, that's the way I am from testing Virginia Geddes when I meet her. By golly, we talk our language. Mrs. Jordan Sergio over there, I talk three languages. I talk to Palatine. Once she see me, she talk Palatine. The way I talk, everybody turn around and go, by God, what is that guy talking about?
How did you learn talking? Did you spend time over there?
I'm 46 years in that area of telegraph, click a mouth to Taliban people from here. And it's easy as a language to learn, because 50% of Taliban language is Tlingit language.
Oh.
My language. But the others, it's just like the Chinook, the Nash River,
mm-hmm.
and Kaska Indians, and Tlingit language, all mixed up, and that's how the other one is, just like Chinook. It's a word from here, a word from there put together, that's what it is.
Talten.
Talten.
I see. Did you, I guess you must have encountered people who. Did you ever encounter anybody who spoke Chinook, or did you ever hear Chinook being people talking in Chinook? It's an old language.
Well,
like an old language. I guess England is sort of, English has sort of chased it away.
They got the picture over here of old man Chief Thackeray Jeff, which, is this your wife that's talking to me?
No, that's Linda Johnson.
Well, this young lady and I we talk quite a bit in this room, you see. And she gave me that picture, that Chief Thackeray Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty well educated in Chinook language, and that's my father.
I see.
And just one or two different things I still remember, I could say, I still remember that. The rest I don't. Him and a photographer man who used to be in Athens, his name was L.C. Reed, which is a lot of his pictures in here too. Englishman.
Harper Reed?
No, L.C.
L.C. Reed.
L.C. Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And my father and Mr. Reed would sit in one corner of the smoking room in Royal Hotel, and you heard them talking Chinook there. Sit there, and a lot of white people would listen to that, and listen, and what a great thing, it says their own language they used to have. And to my surprise, when I got the telegraph from 1932, I find one old woman, a woman in that telegraph with which she died a few years ago. She talks very good Chinook language.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, because I think Chinook is a language that most people figured it, I don't even think that they figured it lasted as long as 1930.
Yeah.
But so, when you picked up Taltan, it was like you already knew a bit about the language, and then you just got some more of their words, and got with it. Their place names, rivers, and got to know the country and the people.
Yeah. And in fact, I married a woman that born and raised in Tagalog, and that's where I got my education in Taltan language.
So that's why you went to Telegraph Creek then?
Well, that's why I moved to Telegraph Creek. And there isn't the There might be very few words that I don't understand in Taltan,
mm-hmm.
but the others that I understand at all. And when I started using the Taltan, and then I used one language or two languages in English, that means that's the one I don't understand. I don't remember what it means. What is it? I used to be an interpreter for the chief of Taltan, Telegraph Creek. Taltan chief. He talks to me in his language and I translate in English. And I used to be the same here in Athens. I used to interpret for the courthouses and the meetings.
Just to go back to the furs again. You say some of the old people, if they'd have a good year trapping, they'd have some money left over, so they didn't need to get credit. So they'd buy what they need for the next year's trapping. Did people sometimes keep furs? Like, suppose somebody had, a couple of link, which are about the same color, same size or something, and maybe the price the trader wasn't offering, maybe it wasn't high enough, but they thought it wasn't high enough. Did they sometimes keep fur from 1 year
to
the next?
No. Because they always wondering why the furs fall off.
I see.
But later on they find out that the moth gets into the fur and then lay eggs in there, and that's how the fur destroys.
Is that like for all furs?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So that's the reason they don't keep them kind of furs. But those furs that they use for blankets and stuff like that, the moth don't bother that stuff to the apes in it. That's why they have it so long.
Oh, I see. And I wonder why that is, that the moths won't bother the blankets. Is that?
I wouldn't understand. I wouldn't know. And when they're going to put in such fur away, like them kind of thing for clothes, they do, not big fur, but especially in the fall time when the leaves are falling, that's when they used to gather up a bunch of marten skins for kids' clothes and for growing up too. Because that's when the fur is good and which it is. And when they put them things away, they put something that would be airtight like, so the moth don't get in or something like that, and put it away. That's the way it keeps.
Maybe that's why the people on the coast use those big cedar boxes, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. That's what it is.
Because the bugs wouldn't like that cedar smell much.
There used to be lots in this in the Taku area, too, where the old Indian villages are. The what do you call it, fall in, fall down, and all that thing went haywire. There is some down there, yet they set some there, but I don't think it's worth anything to move. There was a lot of things in there when somebody came along, some of the white people were going back and forth. They took them things out of there, and I understand it's all in June, Alaska, and the museum.
That shouldn't have happened. I know there was one, an archaeologist who'd been working down there, Diane French, but I think that she would be very careful about that kind of thing. And I think there was young fellows from Atlin who were working with her anyway. But see, that didn't happen. But I know it used to happen.
Excuse me, I'm making such a noise. I got a cold, kind of a cold here.
It won't hurt the teeth.
Well, another thing too, that when I go to Athens this time, I figure I'm going to try and take it up with the Athens band, my own band there. Why they don't go down to pick up some of those remains or anything like that? And nowadays they got this crazy things they call stuff like that, like those cropped words and stuff like that. They could stick them things together and bring it up and show that what used to come to the country through the traders from the Taku River, from the coast up the Taku Indians. The most of the place there, Mackinac, about 7-8 miles from the confluence of the Slope River. That's where there was another Indian village. It's a reserve now. It was a reserve ever since the 20th. And that's where the old houses used to be. A part of the remainders are still there yet. If I had money, gee, I'd like to go down and get the picture of that. I'm very tricky finger on the camera.
Did people trade furs around much amongst themselves? Like, if a young man has got some fur, and he could trade it all to the trader, but maybe he might give some furs to people, or trade some furs with people, say for moose hide or something.
Oh yeah.
The furs moved around in the village too.
Yeah, they keep it circulating around. Some of the moose hide down this way, if they do come up this way, they might have something that they. The tattoos of the testing want, and they trade.
Moosehide's being a good example.
Yes, when they go trading down the coast, they bring up something as seal skins and stuff like that, you know. And there's no such a thing as like that in the Moosehide area. And they trade with them kind of stuff.
Well, seal skin, because it's waterproof, so that was why they...
Yeah. And the seafood and stuff like that, they trade, you see, from my coast. Well, they trade with all the other people in the country, like Tesla and like White Horse and down the Moosehide people.
Medicines, things like that too?
Yeah. Well, they don't use medicine very much. They use the Indian way of using medicine or whatever. They pick up the herbs.
Well, I was thinking like that awful plant, Devil's Club.
Yeah.
Where those prickly things. Well, you can get some medicines from that, I understand. But then you wouldn't get any of that up at Ackland. So,
no.
So maybe
you'd
treat those.
Yeah. What kind of berries they have down there, they haven't got in the coast? And what they haven't got in the inland, well, them are the things that they trade one another. Mm-hmm. They go set the thing as soap berries, set the thing as other kind of berries, all that thing, like pitch gum, you know, those spruce pitch gums. They don't have anything like that in the coast.
Mm.
Oh, golly.
They like that spruce gum.
Yeah, the spruce gum, they used to pick, people used to pick up boxes and boxes full of them things. And they trade them off down there. The people, when they get down there, you see people, everybody, them showing away, they show one another spruce gum.
Yeah.
And then they bring up that, what they make in the stores and stuff like that, gum, and they bring it in. The people in this country here, they don't have them kind of things. They're crazy for them. Stuff like that, you know.
Well, let's put a question another way. If you were, this was back in the early days now, and you were setting off, you're going to make a trip down to the coast, and you wanted to carry a load of stuff to trade down on the coast, what would you carry? Because you could only carry so much. What would be most valuable to carry? Would it be a moose hide, a big tan moose hide, or?
Moose hide.
That would be the thing they want.
And pitch gum.
Yeah.
Pitch gum, that's what they want. Caribou hide, moose hide. Two things. Brown bear or black bear skins.
Why the bear skins? Are they?
Well, they don't get those. They get in the coast. It's not fishy smell and stuff like that.
Oh, I see.
And there was no such a thing as a what you call a custom office that bothers the Indians them days. Never.
Well, I see we're running out of tape here. I think that just about got most of my questions about trapping. But if maybe in the time remaining, if you could just tell me a little bit about George Johnson and Tesman. Did you know him very well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know him well.
He was a trader, was he? Like,
oh, yeah.
Both trader and trapper?
Well, when he was a trader, I don't know much about it because I was in Telegraph, Gregaria.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's it.